ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us.
So continuing the Bhakti Yoga of Swami Vivekananda. Anybody who wants to be a devotee of God, anybody who wants to love God, even anyone who wants to love anybody else or anything else, have to develop certain characteristics. And unless we develop those characteristics, the expression called love becomes meaningless. Let us take a small example. Suppose a mother loves her child, and it's so natural. That's why I take that example. Now, if the mother is untruthful, hypocrite, pretends, cruel, selfish, becomes jealous, do you think that mother will ever be able to love her child? But if she is truly loving her child, and most of the cases that is so, it is so natural, then all the qualities that which is called truthfulness, sincerity, straightforwardness, compassion, and wishing the welfare of the child, they become so very natural. If there is love, these qualities will follow invariably. What do the scriptures say? They say that a person who acquires self-knowledge considers the whole world to be his own self. If the whole world is our own self, the question of practicing morality doesn't arise at all. It comes automatically. So, every path, it prescribes certain rules, regulations. As I mentioned many times, that the spiritual progress has three dimensions. Self-regard, other-regard, means world-regard, and God regard, like a triangle. If one grows, the other two also will go along with that. Until the point comes when there is absolutely no distinction between God, the soul, and the world. Whether he follows the path of devotion or path of knowledge, whatever path. Ultimately, that would be the result. So according to Ramanuja, and which Swami Vivekananda had taken, there are six such qualities to be acquired. This is part of the seven-stepped process, and six qualities: satya, arjava, daya, dana, ahimsa, anabhidya. The first thing, satya means truthfulness. Now, there is a very interesting word. You see, we use it in three senses. The root of this word is sat. Sat means existence. Sat means truthfulness. Sat means God. Another name for God is sat. Sat, chit, ananda, we use the word. Sri Ramakrishna, as the devotees know very well, insisted so much on the practice of truthfulness. Anybody who is not truthful can never reach God. Why? God realization means realization of the truth. Truth is a better name for God than God himself. You know why? Because as soon as we hear the word God, an old man sitting up in the skies comes to our mind. If we are very happy, we see a smiling God. If we are very unhappy, we see a frowning God sitting there and frowning, looking very deeply at us. You see, it's our imaginations. And in the name of God, So much of cruelty has been practiced. In the name of God, bloodshed had taken place. In the name of God, unimaginable horrors have been inflicted upon humanity. But if we use the word truth, truthfulness, then that makes more sense. A person who wants truth, he must become truthful. So the first stage of this truth is that we must become good. Sat means good. That's what we call Sat Sangha, company of the good, good people. Holy people, sometimes they make holes in you. You know who is the holy person? One who makes you holy is a holy person. One who makes holes in you is also a holy person. So the company of the Sat, what does it do? It enhances in us the thirst for the quest of truth. Then comes truthfulness, practice of truthfulness. Practice of truthfulness, truth that will lead to the seeking of truth. A truth speaker becomes a truth seeker, and that ultimately leads to God. These are the three stages. Sat, Sat, Sat. First, company of the holy, then practice of truthfulness, and then ultimately the company of God Himself. Satya. The word Satya is derived from the root Sat. So it has so many stages are there. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, if anybody observes truthfulness, he will realize God who is truth. And he said that those who seek God, for them truthfulness is the greatest austerity. What is an austerity? That which makes us sacrifice. An austerity, you cannot sit in an air-conditioned room and practice Sirshasana and go on claiming that you are practicing austerities. There is a fridge, there is a freezer, there is a TV, it is air-conditioned room, and what are you doing? You claim you are practicing austerities. Austerity means it entails some kind of sacrifice, some kind of difficulty, some kind of suffering. Truthfulness, you see, everything is convenient. We are all very truthful. It is only when we are likely to suffer, then truthfulness goes out of the window. Truthfulness is the greatest austerity. But what is truthfulness? There are some people who think that they are very truthful people, but in fact they are very cruel people. A powerful person can afford to be very truthful. Nowadays children are very truthful. In the past, in our generation, we used to tell so many lies. You know why? Because we were afraid of our parents, afraid of the society, afraid of our teachers. Nowadays, these children don't fear. Not parents, not teachers, not even police. So you see, the point is, if somebody is very powerful and he knows nobody can harm that person, he can afford to be very truthful. He can tell whatever is there in his mind. He can do whatever he likes to do. So one of the things, truthfulness requires tremendous amount of courage. Truthfulness requires tremendous amount of sacrifice. You know, the father of Sri Ramakrishna, in one day he lost all his wealth because of truthfulness. That is why he got God, who is truth. Sri Ramakrishna's life, there are examples. I will give you one or two illustrations, you see. Sri Ramakrishna, he was completely devoted to truthfulness. That's why he had to fight even with his mother and brothers when the time for the sacred thread investment ceremony had come, because he promised a low-caste woman that he will accept bhiksha from there. For a boy of 10 years, 11 years, to rebel against the parents in those days. Nowadays, you see, if some child doesn't rebel, you have to wonder. In those days, it is a great, required tremendous amount of courage. But he was not a quarrelsome person. He was doing it because he knows what is the truth. So, he became a man of such truth. There are so many examples in his life. One example comes to my mind. You know, he was sick and doctors prescribed that he should eat one lemon, and there was a garden next to Dakshineshwar from where they used to bring one lemon with the permission of the owner. So one day the attendant of Sri Ramakrishna went there, brought the lemon, and Sri Ramakrishna could not touch it. He was wondering, there must be something wrong. Why was I not able to touch this today? So he, every day he was taking without any trouble. That day he couldn't touch. Then he sent somebody to inquire, and they found out that garden was sold the previous day and permission wasn't taken. Now you know, nobody knew about it and nobody would mind. After all, even today, lemons are very cheap commodities. In those days, you know, hundreds of lemons used to fall. And I remember Sri Ramakrishna, one of the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna was wandering, and he was very hungry one day, and there was a big mango, and then he wanted to eat, but he looked all around to see whether anybody is there, because if somebody might have lost his mango, the mangoes don't fall from the sky, so it might belong to somebody. So Sri Ramakrishna's very body had become so sensitive to untruth that even without his conscious knowledge, it refused to touch this piece which belonged to other people. That is why whenever any word used to come from his mouth, he had to fulfill it. One day he said to some devotee that he would visit him, but during the course of the day, somehow he forgot. At midnight, 12 o'clock, he remembered it, and immediately he took hold of his Swami Brahmananda, later on, Rakal Maharaj, and he went to that man's house. Of course, midnight, the door was closed, but he put his foot inside and said, "I have come, I have come, I have come." Now, there was a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna called Nag Mahashaya, and Nag Mahashaya knew that Sri Ramakrishna was a man of truth. And there is a saying in our scriptures that if anybody observes truthfulness for 12 years, then whatever comes out of that person's mouth will turn out to be true. So Nag Mahashaya one day visited Sri Ramakrishna because he was very sick at Kashipur. And Sri Ramakrishna felt like eating a fruit called, you call it gooseberry amlaki. And that was not a season for that fruit. It was almost the season had passed by long back. Everybody said it is not possible to have this fruit because the season is over. But Nag Mahashaya had faith. Sri Ramakrishna is a truthful man. And if from his mouth this word has come that I want, there must be some fruit somewhere. Straight he went out. For 3 days without food he searched. And then at last he found one tree. One small amlaki was hanging. He brought it without eating for 3 days and offered it to Sri Ramakrishna. So the power of truth, truthfulness means it is very powerful. It makes people prosperous. It makes people famous. It makes people realize God. But we also have to realize truthfulness is not merely speaking out the truth. Sometimes an untruth also can be more of a truth than truth itself. An example, supposing a patient is there, maybe a child is there, and the child is not eating. What does the mother do? Says, if you don't eat, the spirit will come and catch you and eat you. Now, what is the purpose of this kind of, it's a fib. It's not a lie exactly, it's a fib. What is the purpose of this? What is the motive? For the child welfare. There was a beautiful story in Mahabharata illustrating this. There was a holy man living in a forest and practicing austerities. And one day some hunters entered into the forest to hunt wild animals, deer especially. And it so happened that as they were hunting, one deer happened to pass in front of the sage and disappeared into the forest. Shortly after, the hunters came there, and they, seeing a holy man, they prostrated before him and asked, "Sir, have you seen a deer?" He said, "Yes." "And can you tell us which direction it went?" he pointed out, this is the direction it went. But actually he pointed out the opposite direction to which the deer had gone. And these people saluted him, thanked him, and went in the after the deer, as indicated by the sage. Now, the question is, did the sage tell a lie from our point of view? Of course, he told a lie. He misdirected the people. But the Mahabharata says that actually this man is the greatest sage. He had spoken the truth. In what way? You see, he first of all saved the life of the deer. Then he saved these people from falling into hell because of this cruel act of killing the animal. Thirdly, if he had been very truthful and if he had told to the people this way it went, he would also have been an instrument in the killing of the deer. He saved himself also. Now you see, he became a better person and he also made these hunters free from sin and he saved the life of the deer, and that he is the most truthful man. The purpose of the truth is always for doing good to others. So what is the real purpose of truthfulness? It should be sweet. It should be bring the welfare of the other people. Satyam priya hitancha. That is true truth, real practice of truth. Otherwise, when it suits us, you know, we tell the truth against the other person. And this kind of stupidity, it doesn't advance us in spiritual life. According to Sri Ramakrishna, he has given a beautiful definition of truthfulness. What is it? Man mok ek kora. To make the thought and the speech and the deed completely into one. That is called truth practice of truthfulness. Of course, you can tell a fib if it is for the welfare of a greater good. Not for selfish purposes, but for the welfare of anybody else other than ourselves. Truthfulness is the most important quality. Then the next, arjava. Arjava means sincerity. Arjava means straightforwardness. Now, this modern world in which we are living is anything but practicing the quality of arjava. So, let me ask you a question. A person who is looking ugly goes to a cosmetic surgeon and makes some changes in the body. I say a person who is 60 years old, want to appear 40 years old. Is it straightforwardness or is it straight deception? You know, if you tell truth in this world, then the whole economic condition will come down. The whole economic situation will become a failure. Is it right? Why? Because you see, suppose somebody comes and tells you, I am a salesman, I want to sell a car. You have already a car. And you ask, I have a car. Oh, in that case you don't need. Your car is running all right? Yes, it's running all right. You don't need a new car. Do you think that person will retain his job? If every salesman is so truthful, what do you think will happen to all the business? If the business fails, then what will happen to your jobs? And if your jobs fail, what will happen to your situation? The whole, you see, purpose of this government and government promises. You see, you just vote for us. You know, I went to South Africa 7 years back. The mayor of the country came for the reception party and we were having a chat. I was just joking with him. So if we just hear to the politician's speech, we say, why do we need God? Here is living God who promises to give us heaven. All that we have to do is only just give vote, that's all. He's not asking for anything else. You know, if the politician is truthful, then he will, very soon, he will be assassinated. All the great, so what is called statesmen, whether it is Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, or Mahatma Gandhi, they would not be kept because truthfulness is against politics. That's it. Politics is the worst, politicians are the worst scoundrels in the world. Power mongers. Then you see, straight business, you come to the business. Do we need anything that the business wants to sell us? most of the time we do not need it, because what for our purposes what we have is much more than sufficient. But if that is the condition, if the business people are straightforward, if the salesmen are straightforward and they are truthful, then the whole business situation will come. Not only that, this is an age when pretense is actually forced upon us. You cultivate. If you can't pretend, we will give you courses. How we will make experts in how to pretend to the people. You see, the whole deception is going on and on and on because of this competition, because of the what is called scientific advancement. This is a very regrettable situation, but that is the world in which we are living. Even in married life also. Suppose the husband doesn't feel like saying, I love you. Just imagine what will happen to that family life. Every time they say, I love you, I love you. Have you heard this? Even from a long distance also, I love you, I love you. It's actually, they are very truthful. From a long distance, it's very easy to say, I love you. It's only when we have to live together, nearby, the problems come. Arjava means straightforwardness. No hypocrisy, no pretending, no trying to misleading. This, if anybody wants to love God, then that is the quality. Do you know why? Because suppose there is a devotee and he wants to love God. Can you pretend to anybody that you are loving? That's the first point. Is pretending a love? The second point is, you cannot divide love into two categories. I sincerely love God, but I pretend to love the world. If we pretend love for the world, the same mental attitude will be directed towards God also. That is why it's very important to be straightforward. Sri Ramakrishna could never stand a person who is a pretending person, a hypocrite. He can stand people who are drunkards, who are lecherous people, who are so-called, you know, so degraded people in the eyes of the society. Example, take the example of Girish Chandra Ghosh. In the eyes of the world, he was the most degraded person. But in the eyes of Sri Ramakrishna, he was very highly advanced. Do you know why? He has two qualities. One, he was highly truthful. He was not afraid of anybody. And second, he was all tremendous faith, 125% Girish Chandra Ghosh faith. And truthfulness and faith always go together. This is another point we have to understand. Supposing you love somebody, or you love somebody, can you be unfaithful to that person? Can you be both loving and unfaithful at the same time? Is it possible? It is an impossibility. Therefore, love and faith always go together. This is the second quality that Ramanuja and every religion advocates it, but especially Ramanuja specifies it. The third is daya. Daya means compassion. Now, there is a world of difference between compassion and looking down upon people and doing something for them. Compassion usually means I am in a higher position, you are in a lower position. That's not compassion. Compassion is always looking upon the other person as equivalent to myself. I don't like to suffer. So, by the same coin, I would not like to see other people also suffer. There was a very famous rabbi, and once he was asked, can you teach Judaism? Judaism is a very, very complex religion from one point of view. So somebody asked him, can you teach me Judaism? He said, how much time do you have? You see, if you have got 25 years, I can teach. Even then, that's not sufficient. If you have 1 minute, then also I can teach. It is simple in one way, very complex in another way. The man said, I don't have that much time. Teach me quickly. Then he said, do unto others what you would like others to do to you. This is the whole essence of Judaism or any other religion. The rest is a commentary. So, daya is that kind of behavior, what we expect from other people to do to us, it is the same kind of thing we have to do towards other people. That is called daya. Even Sri Ramakrishna goes even further. You know what he says? To serve man looking upon him as God. Shiva Jnane Jiva Shiva. Who are you to show compassion? Compassion means, you know, I am in a superior position and you are in an inferior position and I do something for you. It only goes to enhance the ego. And the whole purpose of spiritual practice is to purify the ego and to merge it in God, not to enhance it. That is why it is very important, those who do not have compassion, they can never become devotees of God. Why? See, a devotee of God becomes like God. Now, can you imagine a God without compassion? Suppose God tells you, I love you, but I won't help you. Now, how many of us are ready to have this kind of God? Can you tell? So, daya, not compassion, but service, looking upon everybody as a manifestation of God. Dana. Dana means philanthropy, sacrifice, giving what we have to others. That is one of the most important spiritual qualities. Suppose somebody wants to be devotee, but very miserly. And do you think such a person will ever attain love of God? Can you love to somebody and say, I won't do anything to you, I won't give anything to you? Is it possible? But you see, this dana means giving something, helping the poor people, serving the poor people, but it must be preceded by daya. Daya means respect. That is why it is said, any kind of philanthropy, it has certain conditions. Adesha kale yaddanam apatrebhyascha diyate. In Gita there is that kind of philanthropy which is given to undeserving people at undeserving time in a mixed motive or with an evil motive. That is not considered as dana. There must be proper time, there must be proper person, recipient, and it must be given with a proper mental attitude. That's what is most important. That's why daya must precede any kind of dana. Then comes ahimsa. Ahimsa means, you know what is ahimsa? Non-injury. And Swami Vivekananda has something to say about it. Usually, ahimsa we mean that you don't injure anybody. And you don't either physically or mentally, you should not cause any kind of pain or suffering or anything to the other people. But there Swami Vivekananda gives, what is the test of ahimsa? I will read out, it will be wonderful. These are the taken from Swami Vivekananda. In this list, this one idea that deserves special notice is ahimsa, non-injury to others. This duty of non-injury is, so to speak, obligatory on us in relation to all beings. As with some, it doesn't simply mean the non-injuring of human beings and mercilessness towards the lower animals. It is, you see, Swami Vivekananda used to make fun of certain types of people in India. They are business people, I won't name them because you will recognize them. And these people go to any lengths to cheat people, human beings, but they are highly aware that we have cheated so many people. Now, you know, they believe in the law of karma. So they will be also cheated. So they must do something to counteract that. So supposing during the day of business, they cheated 100 human beings. So at night, they will go to a tree where there are a lot of ants. And they will take up, you know, 1/2 kilogram of sugar and spread there. Now, at least 10,000 ants are being served. After all, what is cheating 100 people? Whereas 10,000 people, beings are being served. And there are people who want, they maintain kind of courts full of bed bugs. So during the day, they go on cheating people. At night, they employ somebody paying 5 rupees a night that you take off your dress and lie down on that bed. This is called blood transfusion. So the bed bugs, you know, are very happy and they thrive. So this is countered, whatever they are bad things they are doing during the daytime is absolutely countered by this donation of somebody else's blood, not their blood. You know, what a stupid type of ideas they have. This is one type of ahimsa, non-injury. The other type is towards human beings. People are very compassionate, very kind, very loving. But when it comes to animals, animals, after all, they don't have any souls. After all, God has created all these lower non-human things for the enjoyment of human beings. There is a philosophy like that, especially in the Bible. God created the whole world for the enjoyment of man. He told man, now the whole world I have created for your sake, go and enjoy it. Means you can do whatever you like. How many animals we kill, all in the name of our enjoyment. We don't consider it as a great sin. But for a lover of God, the love is the same. After all, it is proved conclusively, without any difficulty, without any least bit of doubt, that even not to speak of animals, but even these plants are sensitive. If you love them, they will also give back their love to you in the form of beautiful flowers, fruits. And if you are harsh to them, they will shy away. Their sensitivity can be measured. And there are wonderful, what is called, incidents in the life of animals, where animals actually saved human lives. So this daya must accompany the dana that is there. If we do that, then we cannot injure anybody. This is one idea. You treat human beings all right because they are human beings, but treat the rest of them. But the trouble with this idea, do you know what it is? And you see, supposing there are no animals left, then what do these people do? They will turn all their cruelty upon, in the name of, this is UK people, OK people, but the other people are not OK. Every country thinks it is superior to the other country. Superiority complex comes. That's why wars, bloodshed, the whole thing comes there. Then if that is not the motivation, religion is a motivation. They do not belong to our religion. You know, there was an Inca civilization, and the Spaniards went there and butchered thousands of Inca and brought the whole civilization to a close. And how could they do that? Because after all, these were human beings. But they said, no, they don't belong to, they are not white, they don't belong to our race, to our religion, to our language, so they cannot have any soul. If they don't have any soul, it's all right to butcher them. And then some excuse, and then butchered them. The whole Inca civilization has come to an end. And like that, you know, in America, when the first people went there, how many this, what is called that, wild animals, buffaloes or what was that? Bison. In millions, they just butchered them for no purpose at all. And everywhere, human being, he invents excuses for showing his, what is called, cruelty. This is another type of injury. But Swami Vivekananda says, we are not free from it. The subtlest expression of injury. Do you know what it is? Jealousy. That's what Swami Vivekananda tells. The test of ahimsa is absence of jealousy. This jealousy is so pervasive and it is so subtle. How marvelously it works. And you see, the jealousy, the most wonderful thing about this jealousy is, we are not jealous of somebody else in some other country. First of all, we are jealous of the people who are very near, our friends. Suppose we are a group of friends, and unfortunately one of the friends acquires a BMW car. What would be my lookout? I say, oh, wonderful, congratulations, you have this and that, like that. But inside we are crying out, what right this fellow has got a BMW. We can't say, we are friends, we are supposed to express joy at it. And supposing, you know, he brings his shiny BMW, and we are all admiring him outwardly, but feeling very bad inside. After some time, somebody comes and smashes the glass doors of this BMW. How happy we feel. What does it show? It shows that, you know, what I should have done. Thank God, somebody has done it. You know, this is the most pervasive thing. Even among highly advanced spiritual people, this jealousy. One guru cannot tolerate another guru. One monk cannot tolerate another monk. And I told you this story, I will repeat it anyway. I heard it from Swami Bhaskaranandaji. Two wandering monks met and they got introduced to each other. And to their great surprise, they found out they were brother disciples. They were initiated by the same guru. One was a senior man, another was a junior man. But the senior man was not ready to concede that we are equal. So he made, I am very happy to know that both of us are brother disciples. But you know, when we first used to go to this holy man, he used to test us very rigorously and then only initiate us. Later on he started initiating everybody and anybody. You know, showing that how can it be possible both of us are the same category, was it brother disciples? I see these expressions of jealousy every day in my life here. One devotee cannot tolerate another devotee. One day I was working with Swami Bhavyananda here in the garden. There was one of the Dutch ladies used to serve, and there was another lady, German devotee called Christine. And then the Christine came. I was new. So during the course of work, that I was telling to this Dutch lady, why don't you go with Christine and then do something there? Immediately the Swami pulled me back and said, shh, don't say anything like that. Don't you know? This lady cannot tolerate the other lady. I did not know. I thought, you know, both of them, they are talking, laughing and all those things so nicely. How could I know that about this is what has happening? That lady could never tolerate. You know, it happened to me, with me also. You know, I tell sometimes jokes. So one day I told a story and everybody enjoyed it, laughed it. Then I went out after the talk. This Dutch lady was there, unfortunately. The first thing she says, Swami, you can't tell stories like my Swami used to tell. I said he was really a very good storyteller. But the whole point is, see, every time we can enjoy this thing, anybody can tell these stories. Why do you bring on this comparison? If the Swami happens to talk to one devotee longer than the other devotee, let God help the Swami. Yeah, I heard like that. Even among the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, the same thing happened. There are lighter incidents, there are also very serious incidents were there. Lighter incident was that, you know, once a devotee was there. Sri Ramakrishna loved Narendranath, later on Swami Vivekananda, so much that always he was telling Naren, Naren, Naren. And when Narendra was present, Sri Ramakrishna's eyes seemed to be blind to everybody else. So one day Sri Ramakrishna went to Calcutta and Narendranath came, and Sri Ramakrishna carried some nice sweet meat, and he was, Narendra, you eat. And the other devotee could not tolerate him and said, sir, so as you are treating us as though we have fallen only from the sky. Then Sri Ramakrishna understood immediately and said, okay, you come to Dakshineswar, I will feed you. He never said, I will feed you here. You know, there is a kind of jealousy there. Bindu te sindhu deka. Look an ocean in a drop. If you find some good thing in some people, then you see as though he has an ocean of goodness. But what we do is the other thing. If we see an ocean of, you know, goodness, we see it as a small drop. And a small drop of something bad, we see an ocean of bad. So ahimsa means absence of jealousy. And none of us are free from this jealousy. As I mentioned in my last class, even such an advanced spiritual guide like Bhairavi Brahmani became jealous of her own disciple, who was Sri Ramakrishna. We have to be extremely careful about it. Then, you know, these parents, they become jealous. Suppose there are two neighbors, and both families are very friendly. And children of one family gets a better seat in a college. And what do you think the parents of the other family would do? They say, outwardly they say it is wonderful, but inside they have become contracted. We have to be careful. In the heart of a devotee, there should be no feeling of jealousy. But when we see that others are also trying to go towards God, we should be all the more happy because we are all going towards God only, like a huge family. That should be the idea. Swami Vivekananda says that the so-called great men of the world may all be seen to become jealous of each other for a small name, for a little fame, and for a few bits of gold. The man who will mercilessly cheat widows and orphans and do the vilest deed for money is worse than any brute, even if he lives entirely on grass. His reference is in a context, and that context is for many Hindus. He can do the vilest deed, but if he is a vegetarian, who Bengalis call, you know, grass eaters, then he considers himself as the greatest non-injurer. But Swami Vivekananda says, you know, that if a man even eats grass, but his deeds are vilest deeds, then he is the worst specimen of humanity on this earth. The man whose heart never cherishes even the thought of injury to anyone, who rejoices at the prosperity of even his greatest enemy, that man is the bhakta. He is the yogi, he is the guru of all, even though he lives every day of his life on the flesh of swine. What a marvelous statement. There was a great Sufi saint called Rabia. One day she was walking in a forest, and behind her another Sufi saint was also following her. And as soon as this lady entered into the forest, so many birds from the trees, they were competing with each other to get a place on her shoulder. They were circling her, they were trying to sit on her, they want to be touched by her, they want to be caressed by her. Whereas this other man, he saw it and he was trying to catch the birds and put it on his shoulders. The moment he approaches any bird, it is running away. So he could not understand it. So he was not killing any, he had no intention of killing any bird. Then he was very much hurt and he came to Rabi and asked, "Why is it that all the birds are coming to you? But even though I have no intention of doing any injury, they are not coming to me." Then she told him, "That's because when you were a child, in your earlier life, you had eaten the flesh of the birds so much. The taste even is lingering in your heart. And the birds know it." So every living creature cherishes love. If there is love, there would be no injury. Can you think that you can love and be also jealous at the same time? And where there is jealousy, it's impossible to love. But of course, we are human beings, we are weak. There is another reason why we should not feel jealousy. You know why? There is a law of karma. If anybody gets anything better than what we have, it's not because it has fallen from the sky or God is partial. That's because the person had deserved it. And what we deserve, whether good or bad, it must come. So if we want to have the same things, then we must also do such actions which will bring the same thing to us also. Nobody is going to be deprived. His infinite source is there. And even if we have the whole ocean, then it won't become less. But if there is no point in becoming jealous, it will only harm us, hurt us, it will hinder our progress. Because this jealousy is so subtle, it is so difficult to recognize. And so we have to be very aware of it. Now, just I will conclude this with one more example. Supposing two swamis have to give a talk on the same day from the same platform. And as soon as one swami starts speaking, that lots of people come, sit near, eagerly listen. And as soon as the other Swami starts speaking, many of them slowly get up and go. What do you think the second Swami will be thinking of the situation? You know, they won't say anything. On the platform, Hindu, India and China, bye-bye. So subtly this quality called jealousy, bad quality called jealousy works. We have to be very, very careful. Even there is jealousy, not only among human beings, there is jealousy among small ones of the birds. The elder, earlier born one, sometimes pecks the younger one, throws it out of the nest so that it can have all the food. And sibling jealousy, you know that? When a mother gives birth to a second child, immediately the first one goes and puts its little finger into the eyes of the baby. Sometimes. So Swami Vivekananda says, one who wants to be a devotee, he must mercilessly weed out this most injurious quality called jealousy. If we are not jealous, it is impossible to injure anybody. Of course, there is one thing we have to keep in mind. It is impossible to live in this world without injury. With every breath, with every drink of water, with every morsel of food that we take in, millions of creatures have to die. South Indians pride themselves that they are, you know, vegetarians. But they eat lot of yogurt. You know what is yogurt? One cup of yogurt contains millions of bacteria. So we have to be very careful. Then the fifth quality, anavasada, the next means to the attainment of bhakti yoga is strength. This atman is not to be attained by the weak, says the Shruti, scripture. Both physical weakness and mental weakness are meant here. The strong, the hardy are the only fit students. He who wants to become a devotee must be strong, must be healthy. Now, anavasada also means not getting depressed. I say there will be situations in life. Life always will not be the same. It won't go in the same way. Sometimes happy circumstances, sometimes not so happy circumstances. So when circumstances are not favorable, then how are we going to react towards those circumstances? Should we get depressed? Some people commit even suicide, unable to bear these kind of situations. So anavasada means whatever be the situation, one who aspires to be a devotee must never give in to this weakness. Must say, okay, it is God's will, maybe there is even something good about it. Take it in a positive light all the time. That is cheerfulness. Anavasada means cheerfulness. The definition is so beautiful. Desha kala vaigunyat shoka vastu adya anusmritescha tadya dainyam abhasvaratvam manaso anavasadaha. Say, according to time, according to place, according to circumstances. If there are causes for depression or remembering something that had happened in the long past, remembering them when things were not happy, all these things remember and then feel very bad. That not to allow such negative thoughts to creep into the mind, that will be the most wonderful. You know, there are two types of people. They call optimistic people, pessimistic people. Vedanta doesn't ask us to be neither optimistic nor pessimistic. What it advocates to us is, be realistic. Accept the reality. You know, there is a story. There was a fellow, and so, what is called, pessimistic. Whatever you do to him, he will find some fault in it. He was in a village, so the villagers decided that we will prepare the best food and feed him, see what he does. So, you know, some of the best cooks got together, prepared the best dishes, brought him. When the food was piping hot and just very tasty, they fed him. They were waiting for a remark from him. Because being habituated to pass this negative remark, he said, now it is all right, but if it had been 1 hour later, it would have been very bad. You know, it becomes a kind of habit. So it's important for us to remember, why do we have this kind of, it's because of habit. So one of the things that a devotee should always look, whatever happens must be very good. Everything that happens has a positive side, something good. I told you this story, remember? The king and the minister who used to say, you know, do you remember that? There was a king. He had a minister. This minister was a Vedanti. And he used to say, whatever happens is good. So one day the king was playing with his knife and accidentally his thumb was cut off. And just then the minister happened to come there. And he saw this bleeding hand of the king and said, "Very good, very good." The king got so angry, "You fellow, my thumb has gone." In those days there was no surgery to replace it, you see. "And you say it is very good. Put this fellow in jail." Immediately he was put in jail. After a few days, he went out for hunting. He was caught by what we call human sacrificing religious sect. And he was taken as a prisoner, and they prepared the celebration where the kings will be beheaded in front of their deity. And he was nicely decorated, and then he was taken. And then just before his being beheaded, they noticed his thumb was missing. And so he was an unfit person to be sacrificed. They said, "You are unfit, you get out." Then the king realized that what the minister said was very good. "Had not I lost my thumb, then I would have been dead today." So he went back, immediately ordered the minister to be freed. And then, you see, when the minister was being taken into the jail, he said, "Very good, very good." So the king heard it. And then when he was released, came back, he asked the minister, "Okay, now I understand, my thumb was cut off, so it was good, I was not dead. But how come when you were being taken to the jail, you said it was very good, very good?" This man said, "Don't you understand? If I had not been in the jail, I would have been with you. I would have been dead." So you see, a devotee always accepts every situation, whatever happens, it's absolutely good. There was, you know, in a restaurant, a man was sitting in a morose way. And you see, his friend happened to enter that place, saw this man, and came to him and said, "Why are you so morose?" The man said, "Look, you see, we had, myself and my wife had a quarrel, and she became so angry. She told me that she is not going to talk with me for 30 days. The friend said, "What man? You should be very happy. Why are you so morose?" Man said, "I know that, but this is the last day." So, whatever happens in the life of a devotee, he should take it as good. Because you see, there is a principle, psychological principle. Life is what we look at it. It is not the situation, it is how we look at it. We can be perfectly happy even if there are people who are very poor, in a wretched condition, but very happy. There are people very wealthy and everything, but they are not in happy condition. So it's very important to develop that mental attitude. Why? Because a devotee always believes that God is looking after him and whatever he does is good for him. That's why Sri Ramakrishna used to say, have the attitude of a kitten. The kitten doesn't do anything. It is, whenever it is in trouble, it mews. And then mother comes running. Sometimes it puts the kitten, young one, on the bed of the master. Sometimes it puts the kitten on the refuse heap. But under both circumstances, the kitten only knows my mother is there to look after me. That attitude is called anavasada. That means, don't allow the mind to go depressed, to become depressed, to go deep down. And the opposite also is there. Some people, even smallest things, they become so excited. Immediately they become excited. They start crying, laughing, or anything is enough to make them excited. That is also a waste of energy. If there is a good news and happy news, don't become too much excited. Because what happens, whether it is depression of the mind or excitement, it is both are diseases. What they do? They agitate the mind. Such a mind cannot be made to focus, to concentrate. A steadfastness is necessary. That is why so much is emphasized. Sthita prajna, balanced way of life. Whether in happiness, in unhappiness. In victory, in defeat. In profit, in loss. Labha labhe jaya jaye. You must keep a balanced, rational type of mind. Only such a mind is fit really to love. Otherwise we become slaves, dependent upon the conditions of the mind. That's not liberation. So these are the six qualities which one every devotee must acquire. And if we practice all these seven things, what is that? Viveka, discrimination. Vimoka, dispassion, then abhyasa, repeated practice, then kriya, that is panchamahayagnas, then all these six qualities. If we go on practicing these things, then we are just entered into the realm of devotion. But from this point onwards, there is one, all these are meant to achieve one particular thing, which is called renunciation. And that without renunciation, nobody can become a lover. Love means renunciation. One side is love, another side is renunciation. Why it is so important and why it is so easy for a devotee rather than for the followers of other paths, and how we can go to the next step, which is called the parabhakti, supreme devotion. When man transcends all rules and regulations, these are the things we will discuss in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.